Isolating potential Ebola patients, as we've heard now many times, is key when it comes to containing the deadly disease. At many hospitals in the countries affected, the sick are physically separated from the healthy. Anja Bjerre Fjeldsæter saw that firsthand. She's a Norwegian psychologist we heard from earlier. She's been working in West Africa for the relief group Doctors Without Borders, providing support and counseling for Ebola patients and medical staff there. At one Ebola center in Sierra Leone, she says the separation between the sick and the healthy was a big orange fence. Two fences, actually, with a wide, empty space between them. And while working at the center, she became friends with a six-year-old boy named Patrick, who was quarantined there.
We met across the fence. We were making friends across the fence. It's very strange and heartbreaking to see the children in the hospital. Ebola has a very high mortality rate, so you meet children who are dying before they've had time to live. And Patrick, he's one of these children. So I come in and I see him every day across the fence. He catches my eye because he looks cheeky. He's got this kind of crooked smile. He's there with his father. And I know that he lost his mother before he came. And that's probably how he caught the disease in the first place. So I know he's a boy who's grieving, and at the same time he's got quite a lot of energy. He's easy to connect with. He makes a lot of friends with the other patients, and you can see that he kind of adds some life to the place as well.
What was the interaction like between him and his father? I mean, they're both in this quarantine unit, right?
They struck up a lot of friends, and they were hanging out and they were playing poker. They mostly, you could see him hanging out with this group of men, but also you could see these very close and caring interactions between him and his father. His father, William, he's in his 30s. They came soon after Patrick's mother passed away to make sure that they contained the contamination. They burnt all her belongings. It's like they erased her completely. And then a few days later, like in spite of all their precautions, both of them spiked a fever and they reported to the hospital.
At one point, you actually crossed the fence into the unit in your hazmat suit. I mean, were you able to get a better sense of how his mother's death had affected Patrick?
Patrick, he carries this sadness with him, but it's also, you could really feel him. I see this a lot with children who've lost someone, that they're actively seeking connections, that they try to form relationships with other adults. And maybe this is part of the reason why we got on so well is that he missed having this kind of mature female presence in his life. Mm. It was very apparent from the beginning that we kind of caught each other's eye, and he would wave at me and he'd smile at me when I came to work in the morning.
I mean, despite the high mortality rate of Ebola, Patrick and his dad, I gather, received good news.
Yes. We test the patients regularly so we can monitor who has these viral loads that are dropping. So I knew that it was probably in the pipeline for them, that they would make it out and that they would both survive, even if it looked really critical at one point. This period is it's very interesting. I don't know if I'd compare it to a pregnancy, like you know that something is developing. And you keep checking and you keep watching for these little signs of growth. And it's like that when you're also monitoring somebody's viral load and you see it dropping and dropping and dropping. And you know that, okay, so the day is getting nearer and soon they will be able to come out of the tunnel.
What is that moment like when Patrick and his father are delivered that news that they're clear?
Oh, it's you notice when you're out of the woods, I think. So they'd felt themselves getting more strong. They'd noticed that their appetites were returning, that they had more energy. They were improving. Mm. And then when you're finally able to go in and deliver the news that today you can leave the hospital, it's a very, very joyful moment. And quite a hard one as well.
Why?
Because for these people, they have to go home and reinvent their lives. Patrick's father, he lost his job. And there's also the fact that they have to go back and live in the house where Patrick's mother has died, you know, quite recently as well. Sometimes we tell this story of the survivors as this kind of happily ever after story where we just see this moment when they come out of the hospital and wow, it's fantastic and it's a relief. But it's also people who have to make a new start for themselves.
I'm curious, Anna, can Patrick and his father get reinfected once they've survived a primary outbreak, or are they fully immune now?
It's quite a mysterious disease yet, because we've never had an outbreak of this scale before. What we're assuming is that when somebody's survived, they will have immunity, and at least for a period. So right now, we are assuming that this will mean that they will not get reinfected for the next 10 years or so.
Patrick's one wish in the isolation unit was to have a bicycle and learn how to ride it. Did he get one?
As I was saying, we are working really long days there, so I never had time to go to the market and get him one. I really wanted to, because he was my best friend in Liberia. But what it looks like now, actually in touch with a Brazilian journalist who says that he's going to Monrovia and he wants to get Patrick a bike.
That's wonderful.
So we'll see how that turns out.
Well, we're wishing them and you all our best. Anna Bjerre Fjeldsæter, a psychologist, speaking with us from her home in Trondheim, Norway. She's been working with Doctors Without Borders in Sierra Leone and Liberia, counseling Ebola patients there. Great to meet you, Anna. Thank you.
Thank you, Marco.